And of course, on our Monday night program, we'll be live for you. We'll do a lot of patriotic music as our bumper songs for you here on Coast to Coast. Up next, psychic medium Joyce Keller joins us. Her latest work, Why Am I Here? We're going to talk a lot about the other side and the paranormal next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Joyce Keller is an American television radio host, author, psychic medium. She's hosted a live radio show back in 1989. Since then, on New York's WGBB, is featured in both editions of the book 100 Top Psychics in America, and has also authored a number of best-selling books, including Why Am I Here? It's a book we're going to talk about. We'll get into that. It includes, though, information about how you can use your spirit guides, angel guides, astrology, karmic patterns, the Akashic Records, and so much more. Welcome, Joyce.
Hey, George, thank you so much for serving our country, and God bless America.
Oh, thank you. I'm going to give you the award of the most tenacious person ever, because you have wanted to get on this program for how long now?
Well, George, the last time we spoke, you called me, and we spoke about Jimmy Hoffa.
Yep.
And we were unceremoniously disconnected. So I've been trying to get back on since then. So, yeah, I've been very frustrated. But thank you for having me back.
Well, me too. And a great job on your new book, by the way.
Oh, thank you, George. I appreciate that. It's very exciting. So, and it's important because people wander around saying, why am I here? What's all this about? So I try to address that from a very unique viewpoint. So,
what's your take, Joyce, on just what's going on this planet right now? People are just so, I was talking about it during Open Lines Friday, they're just so strange, they're so whacked out. What's happening?
Well, the planet is going through a rebirth, and it has been for the last couple of years. So we're experiencing birth pangs as we move into a higher dimension, and people really need to expand their consciousness, which is why it's so important that you're on the air. And congratulations on your 14th year.
We're moving toward 14 years.
Right?
Unbelievable. It'll be 14 in January, which is not that far away anymore.
Yeah, so this is really an incredible milestone for you, George, and for the whole crew. And it's really amazing because your show is so important, and we really need to know what's going on the planet, and that's what you're addressing with all of your guests. And as far as what's going on, I think the presidential elections are a beautiful indication of the confusion of America.
Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah, confusion of the world. Really.
I still don't know, in terms of even the two candidates, the two major candidates, how that's going to unfold.
Well, I don't believe that Trump will win. I think he might be better of the two. But Hillary has health issues. I think those are something that needs to be addressed.
That's been kept quiet, though, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been kept so quiet, and yet it's something that needs to be addressed. And the vice president is very, very important because of her health issues and Bill Clinton's health issues. So between the two of them, they're kind of not doing that well, and no one discusses it.
And what if she gets indicted, Joyce? My God.
Well, that's a serious problem, but I have a feeling that that Obama will kind of wash things away as much as he can for her, and it may not be as dire as it seems now. So we'll just hope for the best with that. But I think, again, I think her health is more of an issue than the indictment. I think she has two things hanging over her head.
We're going to watch. I'm going to turn all my psychics loose when the time comes. To see what they say. You'll be in the batch there.
Thank you. Well, what would the question be? Who's the president? Who's going to be the president?
At that time, yeah. We'll wait for the nominations to come in, and then we'll have all the psychics come on, and we'll talk about that.
Yeah, well, you know, for years, though, I've been saying that Hillary has the destiny of being president.
Yeah, she does. But, the polls are up and down now. They're topsy-turvy. I think this is going to be one of those elections that will be decided on November 8th in the election booth. It's going to be where people are still so confused.
Yeah,
that undecided is going to be very important.
People are going to be confused, but her destiny is pretty much cut in stone that she is supposed to be president, and that's going to upset a lot of people.
Destiny.
You know, it's a matter of destiny. And before we're born, you know, we have a little thing called a soul contract which tells us pretty much why we're here and where we're going. And then you have karmic interaction and your own free will that interacts with that. But there's a basic pattern that we're supposed to follow and lessons that we're supposed to learn. That's pretty much set for us before we're born. So she has that around her.
All right, well, we've got lots to talk about in the paranormal realm, that's for sure, including your work, Why Am I Here? Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, this book has been a long time coming, and my first book was Calling All Angels, a complete book of numerology, all those other books. Those are fine, but I think the most important reason for writing a book or for being on the earth is to understand why we're here. What is the purpose of our birth? What are the lessons? So that's really what the book is about. It addresses a kind of way that hasn't been done before, so you can actually look up your birth date or the birth date of someone else and find out just what the karmic lessons are, who your soulmates are, what you should be avoiding, what your past lives were. And I do that all through the process of astrology. I hate to use that word astrology because it upsets a lot of people.
Yeah, but, it does. It does, especially if they hear things they don't want to hear.
Exactly, George. So that's it. It's like the purpose of your birth and your soul contract. So rather than say astrology, which is going to upset everyone, I just say soul contract, and people don't get nearly as upset. You know, they kind of accept it and go with it. So it's a textbook of being able to look up what you want to look up, or it's also filled with lessons about life as well.
How many people, Joyce, are wandering this planet right now trying to figure out why they're here?
Everybody. Everyone. We all wake up every day and we say, wow, another day. Why? What's the purpose? What am I supposed to be learning? And as you may know, George, I recently lost my husband.
I heard about that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, thank you. He was my partner and, of course, my husband for many years. We had really an ideal marriage. It was wonderful. We had beautiful children. Everything was quite ideal. And he was so metaphysical, even though he was an engineer. So he was one of those rare people who could straddle the physical and the non-physical, the left and the right side of the brain. And so he was very well equipped with cosmic knowledge, and he died in under a minute and then crossed over in completely lucid intelligence, and within, like, I'm going to say 20 minutes was communicating again.
Wow.
So there was no in-between time, which was very,
that's
very
fast.
Unusual. Very, very fast. And he basically said, I don't know why you think I'm dead. I'm perfectly fine. In the meantime, his body was lying on the floor. So, you know, it's like, so he really...
What did he die of, a heart attack?
Yeah, he died so quickly. It had to be a heart attack. It was very, very fast. And the thing is that he has been communicating with me virtually every night. And his primary lesson is we don't die. And that's true for everyone. Some people sleep for a while.
And if he reincarnates, or when he reincarnates, do you lose that connection, or is there a part of the soul that still stays there and communicates and does what it does?
That's a great question, George. I think there's always residual energy, but I also don't think that people reincarnate while their relatives or friends are still here. I think they usually do wait until everyone crosses over, but anything is possible. There are no concrete rules. I think anything can happen, and if there's a reason for them to come back, they will. They'll come back quickly. But in his case, he's learning and sharing and teaching me so much and just having basically a terrific time and refuses to accept that word death. That's the most important thing.
That's an interesting take. Now, does he describe what the other side is like?
Yeah, he's in school a lot. He was an engineer, so he was very, very technical and scientific, and he's having a wonderful time. He's also learning languages, and he's trying to teach quite a number of different people about serenity and about peace and cosmic intelligence and why we should expand our knowledge and work on our soul development and understand the process of death. He's working a lot. And there's this study of death is called thanatology.
Yes, that's right. So he studies that on the other side?
Right. He's studying
Amazing.
About... Yeah, isn't that incredible? So he's studying that, and he's helping people not to be afraid of the process of crossing over. He said it was so smooth and so easy. He said it was really enjoyable. And so I think that's his primary lesson that he wanted to share, he learned.
Well, what about evil, Joyce? What about people who have been murderers and serial killers and just, you know, the despicable ones on this planet?
Yeah,
what happens to them? I mean, they can't be, like, mixed in with your husband. It's impossible, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, of course, Hitler and all those people. And
yeah, where are they? They got to be in some cesspool somewhere.
Well, God is good.
We call it hell, I guess, don't we?
Yeah, it's really called hell. But even in their case, where they were so terrible, because God loves all of his children, he gives us all the opportunity of growing and expanding. And the case of Hitler or the people that you mentioned who were so evil, I think they would be put into a deep sleep for a while, or they would have the opportunity of coming back as healers or as workers or raising the energy of the planet when they're ready. The people who are the great healers are doing a balancing act. I don't want to offend people, but you know, I always do. They are working to improve the planet. They'll be given that opportunity. So Attila the Hun, Hitler, all of them, sooner or later, they have the opportunity of coming back and raising the consciousness of the planet, improving everything. So I don't know if you agree with that, George, but that's what I've learned.
But with these evil ones, though, I mean, there's got to be a point where they get punished, right?
Of course, after the death process, we have what's known as the going into the clear light, or the Bardo, as Bardo, not like Bridget, but a different kind of Bardo.
Yeah.
And process is one of reviewing your life and seeing just where you went wrong and what you have to do to correct it. And no one judges you except yourself. You're your own toughest, most challenging critic. So you're going to be given the opportunity of understanding and correcting. So if they are not ready to receive and not ready to do that, I don't believe that anybody burns in hell or anything like that. I mean, they really need that experience, maybe for a short time, but I don't think it's very long. I mean, do you feel it goes on?
The punishment?
Yeah, the hell experience.
Yeah, I do.
Uh-huh.
I do. I've always thought of reincarnation as lessons learned where the soul comes back until it gets more and more perfected and it doesn't come back anymore. When it gets to that godlike state or heavenlike state, it just doesn't come back. I mean, there's no need for it because it's learned as much as it's going to learn. But in terms of some of these other individuals, man, I think there's reincarnation for them, but I hope that they learn lessons where one day they don't come back either. But I think they're really on the bottom of the food chain.
Yes, you're absolutely right. That was very well said, and I agree 100%. But I also believe hell is on the earth.
Yes.
Heaven is on the earth.
It could be. It could be.
You have. I think the greatest lessons are learned here, but there are so many other dimensions. There are dimensions and dimensions, and people who say, well, it's just the earth, they're looking at it with kind of a limited scope. So I feel that you're correct, George. That was very well said. So
we're with Joyce Keller. Her latest work is called Why Am I Here? Joyce, have you answered that question for yourself?
Yes. I approach it initially from an astrological viewpoint. Like you, I'm a Gemini.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a double Gemini. My rising sign is Gemini also. So I know.
Wait,
that
what's the birthday for you?
May 28th. Okay. I get Memorial Day.
That's my mother's birthday, by the way.
So I know that. I know. So I'm very, very privileged to share it with your mother. So the thing is that we have a message to share, and I've known that for my whole life. So I was born talking, spent my life talking. I'll probably die talking. So we're here to communicate, George, and I've known it all along. So my mother was a great psychic, and she taught
Hereditary, no doubt, isn't it? I'm
it
convinced of
probably
that.
is, but you know what? I think you can study and you can really open your chakras and you can become very attuned to the universe and you can become a great psychic. You don't have to be born that way, but it helps if you are and if your mother kind of pulls you along. That's very helpful.
You have talked about intuition and how people can develop it. I think it's probably one of the greatest tools we have as human beings to be intuitive, to sense things, to know just what's going to happen before it happens, whether you're in a meeting for your job or your business or a relationship. To be intuitive, I think, is critical, Joyce. Some people do it easier than others. How come?
Well, I think it has to do with what we were just saying, that you can be born that way. Some people are just naturally intuitive. Other people have accidents, and that accident will crack open their third eye, or something will happen, or they'll have a near-death experience, and a whole different person comes in, or you have a walk-in experience. There are so many variables that will suddenly make people much more intuitive or psychic, or maybe it'll be gradual. Maybe you wake up one day with a knowingness, or a new teacher. A new spirit or a spiritual teacher can come in and say, okay, now we're going to start learning something you've never learned before, and we're going to go down a new path. If you suddenly find yourself either reading cards or doing astrology or doing something you've never done before. So there are so many variables about that that open up the psychic centers. That's a good question, though.
Intuition, if it's done right, can get you out of a lot of problems, can it?
Yeah, I think that meditation and prayer in combination is the greatest key to increasing your intuition and opening your third eye. And it definitely can get you out of all kinds of jams, and it can also prevent problems. You have to listen, and you have to pay attention. And I agree with what you said, George, about not having, there's no such thing as accidents. You can't really have an accident because it's all pretty much part of your destiny.
It is. It's pre-planned.
Yeah, very much so. I had a very, very bad accident a few years ago, but I was warned about it first. I wrote about this.
But it still happened.
Well, that's because I didn't listen.
Aha. Uh-huh. And a lot of people don't.
Exactly. And even though I was warned and I was shown myself being covered with blood, and I saw the whole thing very clearly the night before, they told me not to go out. And my brother insisted on all of us going to the beach, and I had this horrendous accident. So, again, you can't call it an accident if you were warned about it.
Yeah. But after it happened, you went to your, I bet you said to yourself, I knew it. I just knew it.
I said it to myself, but I didn't want my brother to feel bad. So I never really mentioned it, but I had tried very, very hard to stay home and not to go out that day. And he actually just about carried me to the car. He said, come on, you're being a big baby. You know how big brothers are.
Yeah.
So I had this terrible situation, a car. But, we're always warned if we have an option of not going through with it. Sometimes you just have to go through with it.
Well, that's true. Joyce, stay with us. We're going to take this break and come back and talk more about your latest work, which is going to take us into the area of Ouija boards and also angels, and I'm going to ask the question to our great audience. Do you know who Tuesday Lobsang Rampa is? Well, you're going to find out when we come back. With us, we're talking about our work, Why Am I Here? Hey, by the way, Asheville, North Carolina, circle it on your calendar. That's August 27th. Tickets are going like crazy now. It's our live stage show. Here are some of the guests. Ufologist Micah Hanks, William Forstchen on EMPs and solar flares, paranormal investigator Joshua P. Warren. There's going to be a so-called replica piece of what could be one of the Roswell crash items. Armed guards are going to be there watching this, so they think this is the real deal. You can get pictures taken. You can touch it. So come on out. All the information at coasttocoastam.com or georgenori.com. Click the little picture there. You'll see it on the highlight reel where it says George and Friends in Asheville. Just click that, and you can order your tickets that way. You'll figure it out once you're into that site. But come on by, and it's August 27th. Welcome back. Joyce Keller with us. We're talking about her work, Why Am I Here? Joyce, you talk about the importance and power of forgiveness. I want to get your take on that because in some respects, I can do that. But there are some areas, and I'll tell you about them when we get into this, that I can't forgive people. So tell me what your thoughts are on that.
I know, George. I've heard you say that, and that's fine. The problem is that if you're dealing with forgiveness, it's easier to deal with the challenge of forgiveness on this side of the veil. It's much, much easier. Once you cross over and you have people who have yet to be forgiven in your life, you're carrying grudges, it's going to be very difficult. You're not going to be able to move as clearly into higher realms until you do that forgiveness job, you know, until you take care of that. So it's easier just to, you know, they say forgiveness is divine. It really is. And it's easier for all of us. Forgive it now rather than waiting. You know, forgive the issue or the person or the problem, whatever it is. Let it go now. Don't carry it with you until after death. I mean, I know you said that it's difficult to forgive certain things,
right,
certain people.
And I'll mention that again. I mean, I could not forgive someone who outrightly goes out and murders a loved one. I mean, I could forgive someone who may be drunk and they get into an accident and a family member dies. I'm not happy about it. I think they need to be punished, you know, in some form or fashion. You know, whether they lose their license and those privileges and things like that. But I could forgive that eventually. I cannot forgive someone who would, you know, break into a house, murder somebody, or shoot someone on the street. I can't forgive that, Joyce.
Okay, I agree with you, except for the fact if you understand karma, you understand that it's pretty much all a balancing act, and nothing much happens unless it's part of what's supposed to happen on the earth. If you believe in no accidents, as you and I just discussed, how can it be that there are no accidents and yet you're saying, well, I can't forgive? Because that's contradictory. So whether you decide to forgive them here or after many years from now, your time of crossing, it has to be done. The forgiveness has to be there. Otherwise, it's a block to progress. And you can't have it both ways. You can't have the situation of not having accidents and also not forgiving.
I was watching a movie, and it had to do with a World War II soldier and an American and a Japanese and soldier. And the Japanese soldier kept him as a POW and tortured him. And then, so the movie, you know, tortured him in horrible ways. And the movie now jumps forward into present time where the soldier who's back in the United States somehow is able to find the Japanese soldier and captures him. And he wants to kill him. He wants to torture him. He keeps him in a little cage. And the movie is about this American soldier's metamorphosis with the Japanese soldier. At the end of the movie, and this is based on a true story, the American soldier and the Japanese soldier reconcile. They actually cry in each other's arms. And in real life, they became the best of friends. And, of course, you know, one has died, and the other one's probably died by now, too. But it was a movie, and it was a tearjerker. It really was. But, you know, that's still a little different than going out and murdering a loved one. That's the tough part for me. I could forgive almost anything, but the brutal murder, I couldn't do it. You know, when we take calls next hour with you, Joyce, we'll see how many people chime in on that. But that's a tough one. I mean, could you forgive a murderer who killed a family member?
Well, that's very hard to say. I basically agree with you completely. But do you think there are accidents, that things like that are allowed to happen? Isn't that kind of...
You mean allowed to happen by fate?
Okay, by fate. How is that different than accidents? Isn't it all the same?
Well, an accident is also fate. You're in the wrong place at the wrong time, I think. But you know, those things happen.
But you don't believe in accidents, though. So how can you say those?
No, I believe things happen for a specific reason. If you get into an accident, maybe you weren't paying attention, or in your situation, you knew you should be forewarned, and you didn't listen.
Exactly. Well, I would say everything on the earth is a scenario, and it's, as Shakespeare said, it's all a stage. So if you look at it that way, even in the most horrendous of crimes, they're really happening for a reason. The stage is being played out correctly.
Why? And I wonder, though, how many of these people who commit these horrendous crimes show remorse later, if at all?
I think in most cases they do at a certain point. Even the son of Sam supposedly was quite remorseful. And if you remember the horrendous crime that he was responsible for, I think sooner or later, because they are human and they are God's children, of course they've gone astray, they still have the opportunity of growing. And as they grow, they will be remorseful, I mean, at a certain point, hopefully before they cross over. And if not, then it has to be done on the other side. So I don't know if that at all reconciles the issue of accidents and forgiveness. It's all very, very challenging.
Sure.
And one of the most important lessons we have on the earth, George, you're right in bringing it up. So.
And you know what? I'm not hiding it. That's how I feel. So you've looked at suicides. Tell me about that.
Suicides are very interesting. You know, you have the case of Eric, who's all over the web. I'm sure people have run across this if you're at all metaphysical. If you commit suicide, you are depriving yourself of the most glorious experience of crossing over into the clear light, which is extremely euphoric and like one of the best things that could possibly happen. And going into the experiences that come after the Earth, going into, as I said before, the Bardot and then the clear light, you have three clear lights that you're supposed to go into. You have the Elysian Fields or Paradise and the Panorama. You're deprived of all of that, which is part of God's plan for us, which is so important. So you're going into uncharted territories when you commit suicide. You may not even have your guides with you. You don't have your guardian angels necessarily because you're working outside the cosmic box or the plan. So it's very hard to state where people will actually go. You're pretty much on your own, and you're traveling without a map. And that's the problem with suicide. At a certain point, you are directed where you need to go, but it can be very dicey, and it's a challenging experience. There are many different levels and dimensions, and you really have to be guided correctly. So a suicide will cause you to have to come back and, in most cases, relive it. Now, I don't know if you remember, George, there was a Reverend James Pike who wrote a book about his son's suicide.
Yes,
do you remember
that? Yeah.
That's probably one of the best books about suicide that has ever been written. I think that was written in the 70s. Excuse me. And it reveals so much about suicide, and it's so important for people to read that book who have members of their family who have committed suicide. Suicide is very, very selfish, not necessarily for the person taking his or her life, but for the people he leaves behind, because they can't understand just what really happened. It's such a sadistic thing to do to those who love you.
Oh my God! I've known two people who have committed suicide, mm-hmm. and I never thought they would do that, knowing them, ever. The first was a sportscaster I worked with in Detroit. His first name was Red. His real name was Dan, but his name was Red. And he was let go by the station. And his career kind of went spiraled down after that. He got some other jobs, and he just couldn't put it together. I was almost going to hire him in St. Louis, where I am right now, to do sports at the station I was running because, you know, the Cardinals are considered, you know, the Redbirds, and his name was Red. It had a great kind of tie-in.
Yeah.
And I was working on doing that. And at the time, he was a manager at a sleazy hotel. And he called me up one day, and I said, hey, Brett, I'm working on this, da-da-da. It's trying to give him some hope. And again, I didn't sense anything about the suicide at all. He needed to borrow $500. And so I mailed him a check for $500. And a couple days later, I find out he had committed suicide and used the $500 to keep his life insurance policy current
for, oh my goodness,
for his family. I mean, that ate away at me for years because I was always, I always wondered, one, what would have happened if I didn't send him the money?
Yeah, but George, if you commit suicide, can you still collect insurance?
Yes, as long as it happens after a certain amount of time. Because what the underwriters say, you're not, if you commit suicide, let's say a year within the policy, they're not going to pay you. But if it's 6 or 7 years, there's no way these actuary tables will say that you're going to commit suicide. So they do pay on that.
I see.
If it's much later. And then the other one was a guy who was married, everybody found out that he had a girlfriend, and he, for some reason, he had a domestic argument with the girl. He was in bed when she called the police. They show up. He has a gun in the covers, under the covers, pulls it out and holds it up to his head. And the cops say, hey, put that down, put that down. The guy was a lawyer, by the way, and he didn't put the gun down. He shot his brains out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so I look at these two cases. I had just seen him 3 weeks before that out and about in St. Louis. He was fine. How does this happen?
Well, people go into tremendous depressions, as you know, and also if there's a combination of drugs or and or alcohol involved, it's anyone's guess.
Yes,
you're not
you're
even
right.
Thinking clearly.
I think alcohol was the first person's issue. Red. I think he got drunk and he hung himself in this sleazy hotel he was managing.
Wow, you know what, George? The best thing we can do, if we have family members or friends who do that, the best thing you can do, rather than grieving tremendously for them, is surround them with white light and just say, go into the light, you will find it, because God is gracious and will show them the light and show them the way, and their angels will reconnect with them, and they will be given the opportunity to correct whatever was done, and the family will have healing. Just ask for the healing of the family and the close friends. So there's always so much guilt involved. It's like, what did I do to cause this?
Yeah.
Like you're thinking, if I hadn't sent him money.
That's right. You know, that's right. Would he have held on a little longer? Ouija boards, use them or not?
No. Unless you really, really know what you're doing, unless you're a greatly developed medium, there are very few of those running around.
We've got one out there, Karen Dolman. Karen is the Ouijaologist, as she calls herself, and she swears by this, but well, I don't hear that from many other people.
A lot of people do swear by it, but you know what it's like, George? It's like having a big party in your house and leaving the door open, saying, come on in, anyone who wants to come in, come in, and you're all welcome. And in with that group, you're going to have some sleazy people, and it's very hard. You guys have a hard time controlling the energy. That's what I'm saying, unless you're a very developed medium, as Karen probably is. Most people will welcome in anything, and they're not. It's not a game. It shouldn't be in the game section. So I salute you for not going through the Ouija experiment.
Well, you do listen to this show, don't you? Wow.
Well, I'm your number one fan.
I could not go through that Ouija board experiment because I was concerned about people listening. I wasn't concerned about me. I think the Ouija board is not going to do anything with me. But I think for other people, I didn't want to take that responsibility, Joyce, because anything could happen.
That was very noble. That was really, really good, because that would have been a good experiment for you, and you would have been fine. But people listening, like when you have a hypnotist on,
mm-hmm.
a lot of people are going to go in. That's why it's really the FCC, I think, doesn't allow most people to be hypnotized live on TV.
Oh, you got to be careful, or somebody's driving. We've got truck drivers driving around. I don't want to hypnotize them.
Exactly. So I think it goes under the same category, Ouija boards and hypnosis.
I mean, I've undergone self-hypnosis. Have you been driving and you sometimes get from point A to B, it might be 20 miles, and you have no recollection of that distance?
That's because you go from alpha into theta, and you get locked in there somewhere.
You really do. You really do. Okay, so who is Tuesday Lobsang Rampa?
I did not know. I had never heard of this person before. And I went out of body in a dream state and apparently went to his lamasery in, you know, an out-of-body state, or call it what you will, some astral travel, which we all do, by the way. And I was there, and I was allowed to ask him three questions, which I do not remember.
He was an author, right?
He was.
He wrote books on the paranormal and the occult.
You're right. He wrote 19 books, George. You're absolutely right. But he was also a medical doctor, and there's so much confusion around him because he was a walk-in experience, and he left his body, which was so damaged from his life as a Tibetan monk. Burns and falling off horses, terrible things happened to him. So he gave up his body, and he took the body of an English plumber, and people said, ah, what a fraud, what a phony. Fact is that I did go out of body to his lamasery, and I said, I don't know your name. I don't know who you are. And he spelled it for me, Lobsang Rampa, and I couldn't get it. I was coming back into my body, and I said, I'm not going to remember this. So my husband happened to be close by with a piece of paper and pencil, as he often was, and he wrote down the name Lobsang Rampa, and that's how I was able to bring it back, because I did not remember. I could not remember that name. And so that was my first experience with him. He's a magnificent teacher who contributed so much, and his website is lobsangrampa.org, and it's all his books are free.
All right, Jess, we're going to take this quick time out and come right back and take phone calls with you next.